Listening test. Task 1. You are going to listen to an interview with a man who has spent the last 40 years alone in the wild. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below. Then you will hear the recording twice. While listening, choose the correct answer, A, B, C, or D, for each question, 1 through 9. Put a cross in the correct box on the answer sheet. The first one, 0, has been done for you. After the second listening, you will have 45 seconds to check your answers.
This is Billy Barr. I met him at his home near the abandoned mining town of Gothic, Colorado. The trip to get there hadn't been short. A flight from North Carolina to Denver, then a flight from Denver to Gunnison, Colorado, on a tiny plane. A half-hour drive to Crested Butte, Colorado, and then a long drive up a dirt road to meet him. This is all by design. Billy Barr wants to be alone. He's wanted it that way since 1972.
This is where I lived when I first got out here. I had a tent right in here. I would sit out here and cook food and read and stuff like that. And then I moved over to...
Why did you pick this spot for your tent?
It was out of the way. You couldn't see it. You know, it was a nice spot. Then I moved into an old shack, and I'll show you where that was.
Did you, when you put your tent up here, think that you would be here 40 years later?
No. I just wanted to be here, and so at first, the way to be here was to move into a tent.
He's in the middle of the Rocky Mountains. There are streams all over, and thousands of aspen trees. His land is at an elevation of almost 10,000 feet. I was following behind him and was out of breath. We walked up to a small, uneven ridge. It was muddy and rocky. The ground was wet.
Go up in here.
Okay.
This is ridiculous. I just figured, okay, I'll show you.
No, I'm happy. I'm glad I wore the right shoes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, if it was snowing, you'd...
fall. After his first few months on this land, he liked it enough that he decided to stick around. So he moved into an old mining shack just a few hundred yards away. It's not there anymore. It burned down a few years ago, but he showed me where it used to stand.
I'm just showing you where the foot... This is where I lived the first 8 years.
8 years?
Yeah, and it was, well, a little less than eight, but eight. And you can see, here was one corner. Here was the other corner. Here was the other corner. And here's the other corner.
It's so little.
Oh, it was tiny. It was 8 by 10 feet. And I lived in it for 8 years year round. At the time, it was wonderful. At the time, it was, I was just glad to be here.
No electricity, no phone. He drank water from the stream. The scenery surrounding Billy Barr's shack is so pretty, you almost can't believe that it's real.
So when I got out here, it was obvious right away. I mean, I didn't go back to school. I stayed here and I lived in a tent. Because that's what I needed to do to stay out here. And then after, that was pretty much it.
This is Billy Barr. I met him at his home near the abandoned mining town of Gothic, Colorado. The trip to get there hadn't been short. A flight from North Carolina to Denver, then a flight from Denver to Gunnison, Colorado, on a tiny plane. A half-hour drive to Crested Butte, Colorado, and then a long drive up a dirt road to meet him. This is all by design. Billy Barr wants to be alone. He's wanted it that way since 1972.
This is where I lived when I first got out here. I had a tent right in here. I would sit out here and cook food and read and stuff like that. And then I moved over to...
Why did you pick this spot for your tent?
It was out of the way. You couldn't see it. You know, it was a nice spot. Then I moved into an old shack, and I'll show you where that was.
Did you, when you put your tent up here, think that you would be here 40 years later?
No. I just wanted to be here, and so at first, the way to be here was to move into a tent.
He's in the middle of the Rocky Mountains. There are streams all over, and thousands of aspen trees. His land is at an elevation of almost 10,000 feet. I was following behind him and was out of breath. We walked up to a small, uneven ridge. It was muddy and rocky. The ground was wet.
Go up in here.
Okay.
This is ridiculous. I just figured, okay, I'll show you.
No, I'm happy. I'm glad I wore the right shoes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, if it was snowing, you'd...
fall.
After his first few months on this land, he liked it enough that he decided to stick around. So he moved into an old mining shack just a few hundred yards away. It's not there anymore. It burned down a few years ago, but he showed me where it used to stand.
I'm just showing you where the foot... This is where I lived the first 8 years.
8 years?
Yeah, and it was... Well, a little less than eight, but eight. And you can see, here was one corner. Here was the other corner. Here was the other corner. And there's the other corner.
Oh, it's so little.
Oh, it's tiny. It's 8 by 10 feet. And I lived in it for 8 years year-round. At the time, it was wonderful. At the time, it was... I was just glad to be here.
No electricity. No phone. He drank water from the stream. The scenery surrounding Billy Barr's shack is so pretty, you almost can't believe that it's real.
So when I got out here, it was obvious right away. I mean, I didn't go back to school. I stayed here and I lived in a tent because that's how what I needed to do to stay out here. And then after, that was pretty much it.
Task 2. You are going to listen to a young woman talking about her upbringing. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below. Then you will hear the recording twice. While listening, answer the questions 1 to 7 using a maximum of 4 words. Write your answers in the spaces provided on the answer sheet. The first one, 0, has been done for you. After the second listening, you will have 45 seconds to check your answers.
Today on Time Sensitive, we're honored to have Maggie Doyne in the studio. Maggie's an extremely inspiring person. She's the founder and CEO of Blink Now, a nonprofit that seeks to provide educations and caring homes for orphan children in Sirkat, Nepal. For her work, Doyne has been widely honored from the distinction as CNN's Hero of the Year in 2015 to the Unsung Hero of Compassion, which was presented to her by the Dalai Lama. Welcome to the studio, Maggie. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So before Nepal was in your consciousness, before you became a mother to over 50 children and built this extraordinary nonprofit with all of these amazing centers and outreach programs, you grew up in suburban New Jersey. What was your childhood like?
Yeah, definitely think about every stereotypical thing you think about suburban New Jersey girl. We do not have the best reputation at all.
My wife's a Jersey girl.
Oh, nice. I love Jersey. There we go. Represent.
Yeah.
So I was one of three girls. I went to a public school, Mendham High School. I grew up on a cul-de-sac, backing up to Patriots Path. I had a dog named Sophie and a trampoline in my backyard. I played soccer and lacrosse and just everything typical about suburban safety, security. Not incredibly well off, so to speak, but definitely a product of privilege and getting to live a life in the suburbs where everything was safe and glorious.
And you got through high school with this sort of very normal upbringing, as you describe it, and then you didn't do the sort of normal path. What were you thinking when you were getting out of high school?
Well, everything about me actually was thinking college, college, college. It was just written right on my forehead. Everything I talked about, everything I worked for was all for college. And all of a sudden, the best way to describe it is that I woke up one morning and was like, why? Like, how am I going to make this huge investment of everything, of money I didn't even have, when I have no idea who I am on the inside and what I want to be and what my purpose here is? And so it was that question that led me to the path of just stepping outside of the bubble and of the box and of the expectation. Because as a kid in suburban New Jersey, you're told, get to college, get to the best school you can. It has to be a name school. And get on the fast track to success, and that was the way. And I have found that to be just not true. but I thought that it was. And taking a step aside of all of that was the scariest thing at the time. But I took a gap year. I signed up for a gap year program thinking that travel and getting outside of suburban New Jersey and seeing something different or experiencing a different culture would help me find that question that I was asking. And ultimately, I think it was just an emptiness.
Today on Time Sensitive, we're honored to have Maggie Doyne in the studio. Maggie's an extremely inspiring person. She's the founder and CEO of Blink Now, a nonprofit that seeks to provide educations and caring homes for orphan children in Sirkat, Nepal. For her work, Doyne has been widely honored from the distinction as CNN's Hero of the Year in 2015 to the Unsung Hero of Compassion, which was presented to her by the Dalai Lama. Welcome to the studio, Maggie. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So before Nepal was in your consciousness, before you became a mother to over 50 children and built this extraordinary nonprofit with all of these amazing centers and outreach programs, you grew up in suburban New Jersey. What was your childhood like?
Yeah, definitely think about every stereotypical thing you think about suburban New Jersey girl. We do not have the best reputation at all.
My wife's a Jersey girl.
Oh, nice.
I love Jersey.
There we go. Represent.
Yeah.
So I was one of three girls. I went to a public school, Mendham High School. I grew up on a cul-de-sac, backing up to Patriots Path. I had a dog named Sophie and a trampoline in my backyard. I played soccer and lacrosse and just everything typical about suburban safety, security. Not incredibly well off, so to speak, but definitely a product of privilege and getting to live a life in the suburbs where everything was safe and glorious.
And you got through high school with this sort of very normal upbringing, as you describe it. And then you didn't go to, you didn't do the sort of normal path. What were you thinking when you were getting out of high school?
Well, everything about me actually was thinking college, college, college. It was just written right on my forehead. Everything I talked about, everything I worked for was all for college. And all of a sudden, the best way to describe it is that I woke up one morning and was like, why? Like, how am I going to make this huge investment of everything, of money I didn't even have, when I have no idea who I am on the inside and what I want to be and what my purpose here is? And so it was that question that led me to the path of just stepping outside of the bubble and of the box and of the expectation. Because as a kid in suburban New Jersey, you're told, get to college, get to the best school you can. It has to be a name school. And get on the fast track to success, and that was the way. And I have found that to be just not true. but I thought that it was. And taking a step aside of all of that was the scariest thing at the time. But I took a gap year. I signed up for a gap year program thinking that travel and getting outside of suburban New Jersey and seeing something different or experiencing a different culture would help me find that question that I was asking. And ultimately, I think it was just an emptiness.
Task 3. You are going to listen to Ellie speaking about one of her favorite vacation trips. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below. Then you will hear the recording twice. While listening, match the beginnings of the sentences 1 to 8 with the sentence endings A to K. There are two sentence endings that you should not use. Write your answers in the boxes provided on the answer sheet. The first one, 0, has been done for you. After the second listening, you will have 45 seconds to check your answers.
I grew up in a suburb of Detroit in Michigan. The name of my town was Southfield. So we spent a lot of time there, but I also traveled a lot as a child and as a teenager. My favorite places to travel were always the national parks. We kept a list of national parks on this one wall in our house, and we had stickers that we would put next to each national park as we visited them. My goal was always to visit all of the national parks. I haven't gotten there yet, but I have currently visited 28 national parks and still working on the list. I remember my favorite national park, and also the first one that I really remember visiting, though I've been several times since, was Yellowstone National Park in Colorado and Montana. And my first memory of Yellowstone was traveling with my family, and I think I was about 4 years old, and my younger brother was with us as well, and it was his birthday in September when we were in Yellowstone. And so to celebrate his birthday, we decided, my parents decided, to bake a chocolate cake over the campfire. I love campfire cooking, but it can go terribly wrong, and this was an excellent example of that. I think at the end of the day, we had a chocolate cake in the fire and drove into the city to eat ice cream at a local restaurant. So things don't always work out the way that we wanted them to, but they were fun trips nonetheless. That trip also stands out in my mind because I remember that my older sister, Jessie, had a goal that she wanted to see a moose on this trip. And moose are large animals, of course, but they're not seen very often in national parks, or at least not where there are visitor paths. So she was looking for a moose this whole time and eventually saw one in a river. And I remember she was so excited to finally see it. So those two memories are some of the reasons why Yellowstone is one of my favorite national parks to visit. I grew up in a suburb of Detroit in Michigan. The name of my town was Southfield. So we spent a lot of time there, but I also traveled a lot as a child and as a teenager. My favorite places to travel were always the national parks. We kept a list of national parks on this one wall in our house, and we had stickers that we would put next to each national park as we visited them. My goal was always to visit all of the national parks. I haven't gotten there yet, but I have currently visited 28 national parks and still working on the list. I remember my favorite national park, and also the first one that I really remember visiting, though I've been several times since, was Yellowstone National Park in Colorado and Montana. And my first memory of Yellowstone was traveling with my family, and I think I was about 4 years old, and my younger brother was with us as well, and it was his birthday in September when we were in Yellowstone. And so to celebrate his birthday, my parents decided to bake a chocolate cake over the campfire. I love campfire cooking, but it can go terribly wrong, and this was an excellent example of that. I think at the end of the day, we had a chocolate cake in the fire and drove into the city to eat ice cream at a local restaurant. So things don't always work out the way that we wanted them to, but they were fun trips nonetheless. That trip also stands out in my mind because I remember that my older sister, Jessie, had a goal that she wanted to see a moose on this trip. And moose are large animals, of course, but they're not seen very often in national parks, or at least not where there are visitor paths. So she was looking for a moose this whole time and eventually saw one in a river. And I remember she was so excited to finally see it. So those two memories are some of the reasons why Yellowstone is one of my favorite national parks to visit.
Task 4. You are going to listen to a student talking about supporting a presidential campaign. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below. Then you will hear the recording twice. While listening, match the beginnings of the sentences 1 to 7 with the sentence endings A to J. There are two sentence endings that you should not use. Write your answers in the boxes provided on the answer sheet. The first one, 0, has been done for you. After the second listening, you will have 45 seconds to check your answers.
Lou called me on the phone and yelled the news into my ear. I got you a ticket to see the president. Lou, a middle-aged professor from Chicago, was my fellow intern at the Obama campaign. She had moved from Chicago, Illinois, to my hometown of Grand Rapids, Michigan for the summer and fall to work for the election of President Barack Obama to his second presidential term, which would begin in 2012. At the time, I was in my junior year of high school, and I was passionate about politics. At the beginning of the summer, I had signed up to work as an intern on the Obama re-election campaign and worked 30-hour weeks the whole summer. Once the school year started up again, I continued to work 2 or 3 days a week, as well as on the weekends. Through the internship, I learned a lot about organization and how to communicate with people who came from all walks of life. I made phone calls, knocked on doors, and walked around public places like parks and sidewalks, asking people to register to vote. In the process, I talked with many people from different social, economic, and ethnic backgrounds than me, and listened to their opinions. In addition, I led trainings where I explained to volunteers how to do these same activities. I even got a handful of my friends to volunteer some of their free time. When it was announced in November that Obama had won re-election, my friends, fellow volunteers, and I were ecstatic. All that hard work had paid off. On top of it all, the Central Committee of the re-election campaign gave out a select number of tickets to interns to attend the official swearing-in ceremony of the president, which is called the inauguration. It took place in January 2013 in Chicago, since that's where Obama had previously served as a senator. Lou, my fellow intern, was lucky enough to receive two of the tickets, and she invited me to accompany her to the inauguration event in Chicago. As she is from Chicago, she let me stay at her house with her. Even though we had to stand up for 9 hours straight to see Obama speak, we had a great time. We traded stories about our experiences over the summer and took in the enthusiastic atmosphere of the crowded room. I don't remember much of what Obama said, but being there that day was a memory I will never forget. Lou called me on the phone and yelled the news into my ear. "I got you a ticket to see the president." Lou, a middle-aged professor from Chicago, was my fellow intern at the Obama campaign. She had moved from Chicago, Illinois, to my hometown of Grand Rapids, Michigan for the summer and fall to work for the election of President Barack Obama to his second presidential term, which would begin in 2012. At the time, I was in my junior year of high school, and I was passionate about politics. At the beginning of the summer, I had signed up to work as an intern on the Obama re-election campaign and worked 30-hour weeks the whole summer. Once the school year started up again, I continued to work 2 or 3 days a week, as well as on the weekends. Through the internship, I learned a lot about organization and how to communicate with people who came from all walks of life. I made phone calls, knocked on doors, and walked around public places like parks and sidewalks asking people to register to vote. In the process, I talked with many people from different social, economic, and ethnic backgrounds than me and listened to their opinions. In addition, I led trainings where I explained to volunteers how to do these same activities. I even got a handful of my friends to volunteer some of their free time. When it was announced in November that Obama had won re-election, my friends, fellow volunteers, and I were ecstatic. All that hard work had paid off. On top of it all, the Central Committee of the re-election campaign gave out a select number of tickets to interns to attend the official swearing-in ceremony of the president, which is called the inauguration. It took place in January 2013 in Chicago, since that's where Obama had previously served as a senator. Lou, my fellow intern, was lucky enough to receive 2 of the tickets, and she invited me to accompany her to the inauguration event in Chicago. As she is from Chicago, she let me stay at her house with her. Even though we had to stand up for 9 hours straight to see Obama speak, we had a great time. We traded stories about our experiences over the summer and took in the enthusiastic atmosphere of the crowded room. I don't remember much of what Obama said, but being there that day was a memory I will never forget.
This is the end of the listening test.